adult persons who lose their job in the mining industry, retrain them. And that is, I think, one of the keys to mitigate the negative social effects when such an industry as coal is declining.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. It's been a tough year for coal production in Wyoming and for the communities and people who depend on it. And there's a polarized debate going on in this country about the future of fossil fuels. Beneath that debate is a disconnect between people who produce coal and those who consume it. The debate and the divide were very much on display at a public meeting in Casper earlier this year. Inside Energy's Lee Patterson reports.
Environmentalists, lawmakers, coal miners, and advocates of all types gathered to have their say at the meeting hosted by the Department of the Interior.
This is a politically motivated sham, pandering to political allies of the secretary and the administration.
That's Richard Reavy, an executive at a coal company called Cloud Peak Energy, coming out strong against a review of how coal is mined on federal land. The Department of the Interior is looking at royalty rates, environmental concerns, and coal communities themselves, and holding more meetings like this one across the country this summer.
My name's Jeremy Murphy. I come here as a sixth-generation coal miner.
Murphy moved to Wyoming in 2010 from Kentucky after getting laid off from a few coal mines there. As of the end of March, that region, Central Appalachia, lost around 7,000 coal mining jobs in just 1 year. And so Murphy has a challenge for the environmental groups that want to keep coal in the ground.
Take your cell phones, dig a hole with a shovel, put it in the ground. Put it back in the ground because coal made that.
Murphy explains that he wants to make the point that fossil fuels are used to produce and power a lot of our stuff. He told me during lunch that this whole public speaking thing is new for him.
So I get the sweat beads and get nervous and all that, but I'm hoping that maybe I can make an impression.
And get people thinking about who makes their electricity.
I find it amazing that people don't even do a Google search to see, you know, what happens when you flip that switch? Where is it coming from?
But if you do a search and put that phrase, "Where does my electricity come from?" into the website Google Trends, like I'm doing right now, instead of a map of searches by region, you get, quote, not enough search volume to show results. Jessica Smith, an anthropologist at the Colorado School of Mines, is writing about this disconnect between coal miners and everyone else. She got into this kind of work
because of my experiences growing up in Gillette, in northeastern Wyoming, in a mining town with a mining family.
Smith's basic idea is something she calls an energy exchange. For many coal miners, their side of this exchange, making energy for others, is a basic part of their identity. When Smith drove trucks at the coal mines during her summer breaks, miners would talk about their work like this.
Well, this truck holds X many tons of coal. That means it can light this many houses for this many hours.
But on the other side of the exchange, when people living in those homes flip on their lights, there's little thought given to the miners on the other end.
You'd still have to dig further to try to think about what is it like to live in Gillette and what's it like to work in a coal mine. So people have a very distant relationship with the actual sources of their energy.
Smith thinks that for a long time, coal miners with steady, well-paying jobs could sort of just ignore this dynamic. But since 2011, the U.S. has lost over 30,000 of those jobs. That, plus environmental regulations like the Clean Power Plan and high-profile, effective anti-coal campaigns, Smith says it can just seem like a lot.
When people feel like they're under attack, unfairly or fairly, right, there's this circling of the wagons, then things end up polarized.
We're a keep-it-in-the-ground group. I mean, that is our MO.
I met Jeremy Nichols at that hearing in Casper. He's with an environmental group called Wild Earth Guardians, and they are very much part of the polarized debate. But the group has just unveiled a new billboard campaign with a bit of a nod to this divide. The theme?
Just transition, which, you know, has two meanings for us.
A transition away from coal and a fair transition for coal miners into new jobs.
Miners have done amazing work for our country for years. They've kept the lights on, you know, to borrow a page from the coal industry playbook. They have. And so I think it's the least we can do to help them.
But that help? Coal miner Jeremy Murphy is skeptical that job retraining would even work.
And to be honest with you, I don't want to. I love what I do. I just want to work. I want to be a coal miner. That's it.
For Inside Energy, I'm Lee Patterson.
The coal industry's downturn is casting ripples throughout the economy. In Wyoming, the unemployment rate is climbing faster than any other state in the country. And it's not just miners who are struggling. From a motel in Gillette, Wyoming Public Radio's Stephanie Joyce explores the fallout from the collapsing mineral economy.
What time are you checking out for?
Let's go.
It's close to midnight, but at the front desk of the Oak Tree Inn, Chris Lohman is still checking people in and out.
They're like family to me, you know, and I am to them.
The Oak Tree Inn is not your typical hotel. It has private rooms and key cards and fresh towels. But most of the people who stay here work for BNSF, one of the nation's largest railroads. In fact, until recently, those were the only people who could stay at the hotel. It was entirely under contract to BNSF. Because of that, the hotel has some unusual features. Administrative Assistant Tammy Burke takes me on a tour, starting with the enormous communal kitchen where the railroaders cook.
Hey. We don't do their dishes. They have to do their own.
Through another set of doors, there's a locker room and a gym, both just for the railroaders. There are a few people in the gym and another handful in the TV room. But Burke says compared to a year ago, the place is basically deserted.
The trickle-down effect has affected us big time.
The railroads are hugely dependent on coal. In 2015, shipping it generated almost 20% of railroad revenues. But last year, coal collapsed, and in the first quarter of 2016, coal shipments were down 33%. Thousands of railroad workers have been furloughed or laid off in states like Wyoming and Colorado. Shelley Lively is one of the lucky ones still working. She runs trains from Edgemont, South Dakota, to the coal mines in Gillette and back, and stays at the Oak Tree on her rest breaks. She says communities rely on the railroad to stay alive.
Edgemont's nothing. It's got three bars and a post office. It's going to be a ghost town.
Lively says at this point, anyone who hasn't been working for the railroad for more than a decade simply isn't working, unless they're willing to relocate to California or Texas. She points to the hundreds of idle locomotives parked on the tracks outside of Gillette.
You'll see miles and miles and miles of engines. Miles of engines.
Coal shipments have rebounded slightly in recent weeks, but Lively says it's going to take a lot more to get back to where things were. And she's worried about what will happen to railroad communities if it doesn't.
It's affecting everybody, because we're not spending any money. When railroaders don't spend money and the coal guys don't spend money, the economy doesn't move.
At the Oak Tree, it means less work for employees. Both housekeeping and the maintenance staff have had their hours cut significantly. Mike Mitchell is a former oil field worker. Now he does maintenance at the hotel. And he says it's a struggle to survive on reduced hours.
Pretty much every month have to sell something to make ends meet.
Mitchell's daughter is heading into her senior year of high school, and he doesn't want to uproot his family.
I'd like her to finish here because she's been here for 3 years, but if we can't afford to stay, you got to go where there's work. And full-time work.
And Mitchell isn't the only one starting to think about opportunities elsewhere. Wyoming has already lost nearly 3,000 service sector jobs in the last year.
The tidal wave is just starting.
Like many other people in energy towns, Mitchell isn't from Gillette, but moved there for the job opportunities. Without those, he sees little reason to stick around. He started looking at jobs in Denver, where he grew up. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
This past summer, Frank Thompson lost his job as a mechanic at Peabody Energy's North Antelope Rochelle mine. He was one of almost 500 coal miners laid off that day by Peabody. And Thompson was most concerned about what being laid off would mean for his son.
A lot of people don't understand when you're out there, that's your life.
And then you get laid off and your whole world crumbles. You don't talk to people that you were talking to for years on end. You don't see your best friend for a long time. I started out there as a wash tech, washing equipment. The most miserable job in the world. It really is. And I spent 3-4 months washing the equipment, and then I started fueling, and I was fueling. I fueled for 6 years, 5 years, and then I got into the shop and started earning my keep there. Then I got laid off. I was sitting there for a couple of weeks just going, what am I gonna do now? You know, I didn't have an idea what I wanted to do when I went to college the first time. Still don't have an idea what I want to do, but I know I have to do it. So I've been in the real world now. I know what I need to make to live a solid life, and I just need to figure out what I can endure for the next 30 years and go at it that way. He's a great kid. Smart, loves it here. I really don't want to move. He likes it here, I like it here. He has family in this area, so try to stay here as long as we can. But yeah, I just told him, I go, you know, they just couldn't afford to keep me around. He goes, oh. And I was like, yeah, it was just, they gave me some money to leave, so I left. And he was like, okay, are we leaving? I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, are we gonna move? And I was like, no, I'm not gonna try to move. He goes, good. I don't want to. I was like, all right, good talk. You know, he just wants to know if he can keep playing baseball, if he can play football in the fall, and that's really all he's worried about, which is fine, because a 7-year-old, that's all he needs to be worrying about. I try to tell him that hard work pays off, and not to whine and ask for things that you haven't earned. And for me to sit here and whine and say that it's not fair for me not to have a job because I don't have the qualifications is wrong. I don't have qualifications. That's why I'm going back to school, so I can get some kind of qualification. The way I look at it is they did take care of me, and I, you know, I have everything I have because they gave me a job. But I also gave them 80 hours plus, you know. I gave them 7 years. And now I don't have anything to show for it, really. When it comes down to it, they take just as much as they give. I just want to live, make sure my son's taken care of, and he can get a better education than I can. I just want to work, you know? I'm simple. I just want to work. I want to take care of my son. And I want something to do. That's the worst part about being where I'm at right now. I'm so tired of just sitting around.
Stephanie Joyce produced the story. Bankruptcies and layoffs plague the coal industry from West Virginia to Wyoming. But in North Dakota, coal is alive and well. There, power plants burn a different kind of coal than in other parts of the country. Coal still provides most of the electricity needs for North Dakota. Even so, as Inside Energy's Amy Sisk reports, the energy is feeling mounting pressure.
From Stan Berling's house at the end of Main Street, it's a minute walk to downtown Hazen. The street sports a thriving business community in this town of 2,400. There's a drugstore, an insurance company, a Chevy car dealer. Power plants surround Hazen, along with the coal mines that feed them.
They support the local economy.
About half the residents work in the industry or in a related job.
I mean, they buy their vehicles here, groceries, you know, support the local retail businesses.
Berling is a control room operator at the coal-fired power plant down the highway.
I work for Base Electric Power Cooperative at their Leland Old Station.
The plant turns lignite coal into electricity, like all but one of the state's 8 coal plants. Lignite is a soft coal, more plant than rock, and it doesn't burn as hot as older, denser coals, which means power plants have to burn more of it to generate the same amount of electricity. That might seem like a disadvantage, but there's only one power plant that's recently announced it will shut down in North Dakota, and it's the one that doesn't burn lignite.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise, but it's still really... wasn't exactly the thing I wanted to open the paper and see.
It's the first market casualty to hit coal country in North Dakota. Nationwide, more than 250 generators at coal plants were retired from 2010 to 2014. The closure next door concerns lignite workers like Burling.
A lot of people are like, oh, this is how it's going to start.
Start a statewide coal shutdown. But so far, the rest of North Dakota's coal plants and mines have held steady. The lignite industry here says its resilience lies in the way it operates. At the Center Mine, 30 miles southeast of Hazen, the coal's dumped onto trucks. They haul it just a couple miles to the plant. For most of the country's coal-powered plants, transportation is 40% of the costs. Lignite plants are cheaper to run because they're built right next to the mines.
It's really more like a marriage.
Wade Besance is president and general manager of BNI Energy, which owns the Center Mine. He says mines work closely with the neighbor utilities.
They've agreed to work together for 30 or 40 or even more years.
Elsewhere, natural gas is often to blame for the demise of the coal industry, but it's not widely used for electricity in North Dakota. Here,
our economic challenge is wind.
That's Jason Borer, president and CEO of North Dakota's Lignite Energy Council. He's referring to the boom in wind farms across North Dakota over the past decade. Wind turbines now generate nearly 18% of the state's electricity mix. That's up from 1% a decade ago. That was one of the factors leading to the decision to shut down the coal-fired power plant. Other factors include low electricity prices and the fact that the plant was small, old, and needed an expensive upgrade to comply with federal clean air regulations. On top of all of that, the cooperative that owns the plant says it's no longer needed and won't be replaced. That troubles Borer.
When power plants have shut down in the past, they've been replaced with power plants.
More pressure comes from another looming federal regulation, the Clean Power Plan. If that plan is implemented, North Dakota must cut its emissions 45% by 2030. Many states, including North Dakota, have sued to stop the rule. If it's upheld, it won't matter if lignite mines are 1 mile or 100 miles from power plants. Lignite emits more CO2 in generating electricity than harder coal.
We have to come up with a solution in the next 2 or 3 years.
They're trying. The state of North Dakota has invested $5 million in a partnership with the lignite industry to build a zero-emission power plant that would convert lignite to natural gas and capture CO2 for enhanced oil recovery. But this plant still needs years of research and testing before it's ready to roll out in North Dakota.
If that doesn't work, you know, we're going back to the drawing board, but that drawing board is empty.
Back in Hazen, coal workers like Burling want to keep their jobs. The 53-year-old left a long career with the local sheriff's office more than a decade ago, eager to do away with the instability of a new boss every election. Now it's his current industry's volatility that weighs on his mind.
Gotta be honest, I haven't really come up with a plan B yet.
Neither has the state's coal industry. For Inside Energy, I'm Amy Sisk.
For this final story, we'll look east to Germany, which went through its own coal downturn. Earlier this fall, German Ambassador Peter Wittig visited the University of Wyoming, and Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards sat down with him to talk about what the state can learn from Germany's transition from fossil fuels to renewables.
I know that Germany has really been working towards kind of moving away from a reliance on the fossil fuel industry. Mm-hmm. Many of Wyoming's coal companies have been going bankrupt over the last year. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can give a little bit of background about what that was like as your country was kind of working through this sort of situation.
We know the Wyoming experience that you are undergoing. German industrialization was basically powered by hard coal over decades and decades, not so much by brown coal, but hard coal. And it turned out in the 60s, imported hard coal became cheaper than sort of the nationally produced hard coal. So that threw the industry in a crisis, and we started to cushion sort of the repercussions that it had in the labor market. And now, in recent decades, indeed, we have started and initiated a rather ambitious program of transformation of our economy from fossil fuels to renewables. That is one of the, I would say, German trademarks in the energy policy. And that has so far created a lot of new jobs in that whole green economy segment. Officially, coal subsidies will be phasing out in 2018. So that transformation process in terms of subsidies has concluded. We have a rather elaborate system of a dual vocational training in Germany. So half of it is paid by the companies, half of it by public funds. Adult persons who lose their job in the mining industry retrain them. And that is, I think, one of the keys to mitigate the negative social effects when such an industry as coal is declining.
Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy day to talk to me.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. Catch our next episode on the third Tuesday of the month. In the meantime, you can find more stories about The Modern West at our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. Casey McNinch produced the show. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell, and I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.